Yeah, hang on.
Blog Talk Radio.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad.
Things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God, my life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Everybody, and welcome to a brand new show we have going on here. This is Islam Exposed, and your hosts are Agador, me, Cal Fritzy, and of course, our wonderful Tim Burton. Now, what we are going to be doing with this particular program is that we're going to start taking our respective governments to task, and I want to read to you our mission statement. Welcome to Islam Exposed, where your hosts, H.E.G., Cal Fritzy, and Tim Burton, share their insights and apprise you on how our respective governments are not addressing the threat called Islam. Three hosts, three different countries with one common denominator, our love of freedom and a planet rid of the scourge. But right now, I want to say hello to Tim. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good afternoon, Cal. I'm unbelievably well. And how the devil are you today?
I'm doing very, very infidelly fine.
Where have I not heard that before?
My refrain. But we do have quite the busy show. Agador will be Skyping in momentarily. And I'm rather excited about this new endeavor.
Well, yes, indeed. There's, as I frequently say on our other shows, Islam is the gift that keeps on giving. And not only do we have a never-ending litany atrocities carried out by the adherents of the religion of peace each and every day to talk about and to apprise our listeners of. We also have a never-ending series of appeasements and dimitude from our respective governments, as you say. It's one thing being faced with an enemy that will stop us at nothing to take over the world in the name of Islam and reduce us all to third-class status. But it's quite another for our governments to be actively complicit in the process when they should be protecting us against the ravages of these people as they attempt to subvert the respective indigenous populations. So, yeah, I think we have a lot of work ahead of us, Kel, but I think this is an excellent platform from which to start.
Absolutely. And guess who has just came through the door? That is the third host of the program, and that's Agador. Hi, Agador. How are you today?
I'm great. Hello, Kel, and hello, Tim, my friends.
Hello, Agador.
I'm fantastic. I'm fashionably late, but here, ready to help expose our governments that definitely need exposing when it comes to Islam. Ready to go, my friends. Ready.
We have quite a few clips that we're going to share. We've got a lot of information and articles coming out of Israel and what's going on over there right now. I'm sure, unless you live under Ayers Rock, you're familiar with what is going on in Israel with the Gaza Strip and Hamas and what is going on there. We will be concentrating very much on that, and we do have a message from the people of Israel we're going to share with you later, and we also have a clip that we're going to share from Barack Hussein Obama, in which he's rather concerned about what is going on over there in Israel and the casualties against the fails. So, but I wanted to, Agador, I wanted you to lead into this, and what on earth is the United States doing, in particular what Obama is declaring?
It really does turn your stomach if you support Israel at all. You want to be loyal to your government. I know you too feel that way about your government. You want to be loyal to your government, and you want to be loyal to your leaders, and you know that your leaders represent you as a nation before the world. But I have to preface this by saying to the people of Israel, please do not think that Barack Hussein Obama is representative of a majority of the people of the United States of America. If there is anyone who is actually in agreement with him, they are either functionally insane, have completely drunk the party Kool-Aid, or simply do not understand the situation that you live under there in Israel. Please know, most of the people of the United States of America wish you well and wish your state of Israel well and are appalled by these constant rocket attacks and would not put up with the same thing here in the United States. That is absolutely guaranteed. So please do not think this clown who is our president is representative of most of the people. Now, I'll set this up by saying that President Obama, in my opinion, because much of this is opinion, feels that the United States of America has somehow unfairly been a leader in the world when it comes to shaping policy, and wants to see us brought down a peg or two and equated more with other countries in the world. And he also wants to see the countries that are our allies brought down at the same time, while others are elevated to some equilibrium with them. That being the case, he has also brought in, he has also bought into the ideology or the belief system that Islam and Islamists have somehow been oppressed in the world by everyone else, and he's trying to create equilibrium with that by funding organizations like Hamas. And this has led to his less than enthusiastic direct support of Israel. Now, we did vote. I want to say this, guys. We did vote as a country in the United Nations not to investigate the Israeli Defense Forces for war crimes when they took that vote. I'm proud that we at least did that. But this is the thinnest veiled support for Israel that we could possibly have. And this president of ours has quite the unbelievable attitude towards the people and the cause of the Israeli state. And I'm not even going to get into his Secretary of State because we only have a two-hour show. And with
that,
I will throw it back to you and Tim.
Well, I think that we were discussing this, and one thing in particular that, and a lot of people, a lot of pundits are talking about this scenario, and we have as well, in that what if Canada was lobbying rockets, say, into New York City? And Michael Green and I also had this conversation. Would the United States just sit back and take it, or would the United States fire rockets back? What is the difference? Israel is under siege. Israel is being attacked. I'm sick and tired of hearing this being referred to as, say, an assault from Israel into the Gaza Strip on Hamas. Hamas will not let up. Hamas is firing rockets from mosques, for goodness sake. Israel is firing leaflets warning the civilians that we're coming in, we're targeting this, get out. Hamas is doing no such thing. Tim, you and I had a conversation about this, and you posted something very compelling on your Facebook account, which I reiterated from the other day. And this is true. Israel is going way out of its way to ensure the least casualties as possible. Hamas has absolutely no compunction about using their women and children as human shields, thus the higher casualty rate. And Tim, what do you think about the lack of mainstream media exposure on that aspect?
Well, the mainstream media coverage doesn't really surprise me at all. Historically, every time Israel has had to go out of its way to defend itself, which it has done on several occasions in the past, the mainstream media have been unremittingly hostile. Now, I'm sure on the very first occasion this happened, people at the top in the Israeli government were taken by surprise by it, because they did what they felt was a realistic thing to do, that their country was under attack and they wanted to respond in order to eliminate the threat so citizens could live in peace. That's a perfectly reasonable position for any government to take, and I'm sure they were very, very surprised when the mainstream media portrayed it as an unprovoked aggression by Israel on the poor little innocent Arabs who had the misfortune to be living in the area next to an aggressive entity called Israel. But they do seem to have learned, and in the past couple of weeks, I think Israel have done an excellent job of putting out the truth about the situation in a series of posters. I mean, I'm not just talking about leaflets to the people of Gaza, but I'm talking about posting on social media, in particular Facebook. The Israeli Defense Forces have done a very good job in portraying the truth in the face of unrelentingly hostile mainstream media. All right, so Israel is perhaps always going to be faced with an unremittingly hostile mainstream media, and they have no control over that. But what they do have control over is their ability to put the truth out and present their side of the story in a very compelling way. And it's quite obvious, I think, to most people. We're about 15 days into this particular conflict. When I say 15 days into the conflict, I obviously mean where Israel decided that enough was enough and was going to go in and take out the cause of the rocket attacks and so on once and for all. And they seem to have every intention of doing that as we speak. So that part of the conflict is 15 days old. And in those 15 days, I think they have done an excellent job of portraying the Hamas thugs as the true terrorists that they really are. And where the Palestinians are being presented as a hapless bunch of innocent civilians, it's by the mainstream media. It's quite obvious from looking at the Israeli aspect of it, it's quite obvious that the level of casualties is caused in no small part by the activities of Hamas themselves. And of course, you've got to remember that Hamas didn't get there by accident. Hamas got there because they were voted in back in 2006, with a sweeping majority, a landslide majority of Palestinians wanted Hamas as their government, because they were going to do everything they could to the economy, not because they were going to make Gaza the greatest tourist attraction in the Mediterranean, not because they were going to make Gaza the greatest banking center or manufacturing center in the Islamic world, but because Gaza promised the best prospect that the Palestinians could see of pushing the Jews into the sea. Now, that's a totally unrealistic attitude for them to take, but as they have taken that attitude, voted in Hamas, then I'm afraid that my response is going to be that they deserve everything they get. Nobody wants to see children killed, obviously, but actions have consequences, and the Palestinians are now feeling the consequences of the actions that they chose. And for them to go whining to the Western world saying big bad Israel is treating us very harshly, I think most people now can see through that. There'll always be people, of course, on the left of the political spectrum who will refuse to see the truth no matter what, but I'm very pleased to see that Israel have got their act together regarding public relations, to the extent that the way that they have presented their case, their cause, and the actions that they've taken every day to minimise casualties and to demonstrate quite clearly who is taking the moral high ground, and it certainly isn't Hamas and the Palestinians. I think the way they've done that is absolutely remarkable, and they certainly have my full support, without a doubt. I mean, all right, I'm thousands of miles away, but in my small way, I do try and do what I can by posting on social media, and I always make sure I never go down to my Muslim convenience store without a Israeli Defense Forces T-shirt on. And
oh,
I'm
that's
sure.
You know what? I so totally commend you for that, Tim.
I've got to get some of those. I have got to get me some of them.
Oh, I've got my I Love Israel T-shirt written in Arabic and English, so there you go. But Agador has shared what his administration is feeling. What about you, Tim? I'm going to share in a moment what my prime minister in Canada feels, what he's feeling about this, and then we're going to play a clip by Barack Hussein Obama. But, yeah. Tim, what is David Cameron doing about this, and what is his stance on this particular conflict?
Well, I'm sure when the conflict first started, his initial reaction would be, here's old bad again. But I think 15 days into the conflict, things might well have. And the reason I say that is because his recently appointed Foreign Secretary, Philip Hammond, was actually on TV today. He'd gone to Israel, this is Philip Hammond, and he'd stood on a podium next to the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, and he said that the British government stand with Israel against the terrorist organization Hamas. And that is really a very refreshing statement to come out from the British government. I'm sure Philip Hammond wouldn't have said that if he hadn't had David Cameron's okay on the matter. But, I mean, it's not so long ago that we had people like Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller banned from the UK because Home Secretary Theresa May was pressured to ban those two people, not least in part because they supported Israel. I mean, there was all sorts of other reasons as well, but a Freedom of Information Act gave us that information after the decision was taken to not allow those two people into the country. And this was only a year ago, remember. The reason given was that they were supporters of Israel. So a year ago, people in the Cameron government were openly... People at senior level were openly against Israel. And now we have the spectacle of the British Foreign Minister sharing a podium with the Israeli Prime Minister and declaring support for Israel. I mean, okay, he still has to come out and say, well, we were a bit also concerned about the level of casualties. But for him to actually stand there and say what he said, given the total lack of support for Israel only 12 months ago, I think is absolutely remarkable. And it must reflect David Cameron's change of mind to a certain extent over who has got the moral high ground when it comes to Israel versus the belligerent neighbours that it has in the region.
Well, I'm really, really, really heartwarmed by that. Pardon me. Pardon me. I'm very heartwarmed to hear that. Now, what I want to do is I want to read the official statement from the Parliament of Canada. And this is a statement by Prime Minister of Canada, by the Prime Minister of Canada in response to the situation in Israel. And this is from a week ago. Prime Minister Stephen Harper today issued the following statement in response to the situation in Israel, and I will read verbatim. The indiscriminate rocket attacks from Gaza on Israel are terrorist acts for which there is no justification. It is evident that Hamas has deliberately been using human shields to further terror in the region. Failure by the international community to condemn these reprehensible actions would encourage these terrorists to continue their appalling actions. Canada calls on its allies and partners to recognize that these terrorist acts are unacceptable and that solidarity with Israel is the best way of stopping the conflict. Canada is unequivocally behind Israel. We support its right to defend itself by itself against these terror attacks and urge Hamas to immediately cease their indiscriminate attacks on innocent Israeli civilians. Canada reiterates its call for the Palestinian government to disarm Hamas and other Palestinian terrorist groups operating in Gaza, including the Iranian proxy Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Now, that is a statement from the Prime Minister's Office of Canada. Now, let's see what Obama says about this.
Good morning, everybody. I want to make a brief statement about the tragedy in Ukraine. Before I do, though, I want to note that Secretary Kerry has departed for the Middle East. As I've said many times, Israel has a right to defend itself against rocket and tunnel attacks from Hamas. And as a result of its operations, Israel has already done significant damage to Hamas's terrorist infrastructure in Gaza. I've also said, however, that we have serious concerns about the rising number of Palestinian civilian deaths and the loss of Israeli lives. And that is why it now has to be our focus and the focus of the international community to bring about a ceasefire that ends the fighting and that can stop the deaths of innocent civilians, both in Gaza and in Israel. So Secretary Kerry will meet with allies and partners. I've instructed him to push for an immediate cessation of hostilities based on a return to the November 2012 ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. The work will not be easy. Obviously, there are enormous passions involved in this and some very difficult strategic issues involved. Nevertheless, I've asked John to do everything he can to help facilitate a cessation of hostilities. We don't want to see any more civilians getting killed.
Now, I'm going to pass this back to Agador in a moment, but I want people to pay attention, very close attention, to the stark contrast in the statement from Prime Minister Stephen Harper of Canada and that of Barack Hussein Obama. Stephen Harper unequivocally denounced Hamas and their terrorist activities, whereas Obama was concerned about civilian deaths. Canada recognizes that Hamas is a terrorist organization and that they are indeed using human shields. Barack Hussein Obama does not address that. He does not relate as to why the casualty rates are higher in the Gaza Strip. It's because Hamas is deliberately putting civilians right in front. Israel is doing its absolute best to ensure the least civilian casualties as possible. Hamas, of course, is not doing anything. Any Jew is fair game in their eyes. And this is what Barack Hussein Obama does not address, Agador.
Well, no, of course he doesn't. You know, again, it's his overall plan of equivalency. And I really believe and have believed for years now that that part of that plan of equivalency does mean the disappearance of Israel as a state. He'll never say it. In fact, during the debates in the 2012 election, his vice president said, oh, well, we call Prime Minister Netanyahu Bibi. Well, they can call him Bibi all they want, but the proof of the pudding is in the support, or lack thereof. And that statement just proves the lack of support. And it proves just how much of a weasel this our American president really is. He's trying to look like the good guy in front of the wrong people. He's trying to look like the friend of people who actually, as Tim so well put it, use human shields to protect terrorists who send rockets indiscriminately into a non-belligerent country. This is the kind of lawyeristic tap dancing that President Obama has been famous for. If you listen to that clip closely, You know he would be able to walk into any interview tomorrow or today and say, oh well, I did say that I support Israel, but again, if you listen to the clip, the tone of it is definitely pro Hamas and definitely anti Israel. It puts the onus of civilian casualties on Israel exactly where it does not belong. This president's actions, when compared to those of Prime Minister Harper, are, in my opinion, reprehensible. And, Kel, I still say we will trade you, okay? We will trade you, President Obama, for Prime Minister Harper. And I guarantee I could get every state in the union to sweeten the deal on that if you guys in Canada agree to it. Yeah, he's horrible.
Gosh, you know what? Wild Bill for America is still trying to swap California for British Columbia, and I'm sorry, I have to say no to you two.
Okay.
Oh, but yet Stephen Harper has been a very, very effective prime minister in his terms. Even at the worst of the economic fallout, he really did keep Canada afloat. It's kind of handy when we get into economic crises that our prime minister is an economist by trade. So that kind of helped a little bit. We had some austerity measures, but we're Canadians, we're resilient, we can take it. The American people with their austerity measures, you're Americans, you're resilient, you can take it. Tim, as from England, you're English, you're resilient, you can take it. But I am particularly very proud of my Prime Minister, and I hope to have him on board for a very long time. We're going to play a clip by, this is a message from the people of Israel. We're going to play that one in a moment, but I want to pass the mic back to Tim and ask him in particular, if it came down to sending, well, actually, this is a generic question. I don't think Israel needs it, but I'm just wondering, what if it came to the point where there was international intervention, i.e. the UN? Do you think that we should intervene either with Hamas or Israel? Do you think that, or do you think the international community, and especially the UN, should stay out of this one? And I'll let Tim respond to that.
Well, I certainly don't think at this stage that we should be involving ourselves in any level of military support. I mean, we've gone out of our way in the past few years to provide military support during the Arab Spring, and look where it got us. We managed to remove quite a few dictators who were sympathetic to the West, or relatively sympathetic to the West, and we managed to empower a bunch of Islamists to take power in Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, and of course we've got this ongoing disaster in Iraq and Syria. And it was only a year ago, or less than a year ago, when Cameron was actually trying to push for international military support to go into Syria. And I thought at the time it would be a huge mistake. And fortunately, so did the decision, the people who were involved in the decision-making process that eventually thwarted Cameron's plans. And no military support was forthcoming. I always think it's dangerous, because if you get involved militarily, first of all, you're going to always, no matter what you do, you're going to piss off a bunch of Muslims. And of course, when Muslims get pissed off, they don't go and sit down and write a letter to the local newspaper, to the Guardian, saying, "Dear sir, I'm not in total agreement with what our Prime Minister has done." Oh no, it's pick up the nearest kitchen knife, and it's out on the street, and it's Allah Akbar all the way. And, of course, we're starting to realise how much of a national security problem that can be. It didn't really matter when Muslims were less than 1% of the percentage population in our Western countries. You know, if a few Muslims were upset, well, it wouldn't have mattered a great deal, and it certainly wouldn't have affected national security. But now they're 5% in the UK, a bit less than that in Canada, not quite so much that in America. We are starting to notice that they have the potential to cause enormous problems. And of course, in Europe, in France and Sweden and Holland, where they're getting on for 10-15%, if not more in some cities, major, major problems. France in particular has had to introduce a ban on pro-Palestinian protests. Much good may it do them, of course, because they are so frightened about the prospect of large numbers of Muslims on the streets. And so they should be, because, you know, these people are absolutely out of control when they get going in large numbers. They don't have a civilized bone between them, and they're capable of causing immense damage and loss of life, and impacting on the economy of the country and its interests. Wherever you go, you're always going to get this problem with Muslims, because that's the nature of the beast. So I certainly don't think we should be looking at, to go back to your original question, I don't think we should have any sort of intervention at this stage. By all means, we should be offering as much as we can in the way of moral support, and there may well be a case for offering humanitarian support if people are displaced from their homes and they're at risk of dying through lack of food or lack of water or lack of a roof over their heads. Yes, we should do what we can there, but I certainly don't think that our involvement should be anything beyond that, because I think we're likely to store up a lot more trouble for ourselves in the future if we take any more steps than that. That's not to say that we shouldn't review the situation day by day, week by week, month by month, and see how things change. Because at the end of the day, Israel is on the front line against the global jihad that threatens us all. It's not just Israel that's threatened. It's, by extension, it's the rest of the Western world, the civilized world, that would be totally exposed to the barbarity of Islam if Israel were to collapse. And so we should do what we can to support them. I personally think that Israel is quite capable of taking care of itself militarily as we speak, but obviously we do need to make sure that we don't allow the forces of evil by which I mean Islam. When I say the forces of evil, I'm not mincing words here. Islam is an evil entity. It's an evil ideology, and it's rendered evil by the fact that people in authority refuse to recognize its real nature. They persist in calling it a benign and tolerant and peaceful religion, when in fact it's a totalitarian political ideology bent on world domination. If we were going to do anything to help Israel, I think it would be to offer as much moral support as we can, and to promote the truth about Islam and make sure everybody understands that it is not the benign and tolerant and peaceful religion that generations of Muslims have conned us all into believing. Generations of Muslims have conned generations of non-Muslims into believing that Islam is somehow benevolent, is somehow a force for good in the world, is somehow serves humanity, all of which is a complete fiction. Islam, arguably the worst possible idea in the human history of bad ideas, and we should be doing everything we can to constrain and control it and prevent it gaining a foothold to any greater extent than it already has. So there's my answer in a nutshell, Kel, and back to you.
Thank you, and Tim, well said. And Agador, I agree with what you said in the chat room in that Tim's right. Israel is the dress rehearsal. The rest of us are the big show if we don't do something. Now, one thing I want to, before I play this clip, a message from the Israeli people, Agador, I want to have you address something, and that is the United States disproportionately offers the most foreign aid to the Palestinian so-called state.
Yeah.
These people on a per capita basis received the most funding globally, and Obama is rather keen to ensure that their waistbands expand, and your tax dollars are supporting these terrorist organizations. How does that make you feel, as a taxpayer in particular, but as a patriot of the American people and as a supporter of Israel, how does that make you feel?
Oh, well, it's a horror. I mean, and I would really like to quickly answer the question you asked him about possible intervention. It wouldn't hurt me as a knee-jerk reaction to drop a few bombs in Gaza. It really wouldn't hurt me. Wouldn't make me lose any sleep at night if we did that. But I think mostly yes. Just stepping off, not funding Hamas, your question, not funding Hamas, not funding the so-called Palestinians, would be the biggest way we could help Israel. In fact, shifting, not even using that funding for anyone in this conflict, but possibly the people of the United States of America sending humanitarian aid to Israel, who is being attacked. Would be a larger help. Maybe even shifting those funds to Israel. If President Obama wants to be quote unquote fair, we can do a 90%, 10% thing. 10% for Hamas, 90% for Israel. If he just has to give some money to terrorists, we could do that. Otherwise, yes, let's do that. Let's provide Israel. If Israel needs munitions and ordnance, that they might happen to get from us, let's make sure that they stay armed and ready, and let us leave the Israeli Defense Forces alone to do that voodoo that they do so well. then back to you.
Absolutely. And I'm going to play this clip now, and this is the message from the people of Israel. But before I do that, I want to acknowledge that we have people in the chat room joining us. That would, of course, be you're listening to Islam Exposed with your hosts, Agador, Kel, and Tim. But we are also grateful to have Bigfoot, Cal Living, Moving Forward, Paul Alexander, and Vito Esposito join us in the chat, and Sweet Sue from New Mexico joining us on the line.
Love you, Sue.
And a special shout-out to Paul. Our logo, if you scroll up and look at the show notes and look at the slides above that, you're going to see a logo that Paul Alexander made for us. So, Paul, thank you very much for that. Now, we do want to play this clip, and this is a message from the people of Israel. We will see everybody back here in 4 minutes.
Hey, world. How's it going? Yeah, it's us again, the people of Israel, a country so tiny that you can barely write our name on the globe. You have to write a part of it on the water or a neighboring country. The only country the Jewish people have, where they are free to speak their language with no hesitation, to live their lives and prevent another Holocaust like the one they endured a bit more than 60 years ago. Remember that? Just making sure, because your memory tends to be short. The country that from the moment it was established, a bit over 60 years ago, has contributed and dedicated its human capital, its technological capabilities, and its innovational spirit for the sake of the global population. So we have one small request from you. No, don't worry, dear world. We know you're busy with issues like global warming, the energy crisis, and the bad economy. We truly understand, and we won't take much of your time. And, how to say this lightly, we don't demand much from you anyways, only to hear us out this time. In the next couple of days, the IDF will hopefully take on a powerful and painful military operation in a territory used by terrorists. Don't forget that you call them that too, that are causing this atrocious act of aggression against innocent civilians. An operation that will hopefully restore the peace and the safety of millions of Israelis and put an end to the hundreds of rockets fired towards them. Many people will leave their workplace. Families will cancel their summer vacations and halt their normal lives. Their focus and drive will be set on retaliating against the scoundrels that can't differentiate between a tank or a garden or a school, against those who believe it is appropriate and justified to use their own children as human shields, against those who think that firing rockets on settled and densely populated areas is a legitimate protest. No, dear world, we don't need your help with soldiers or forces. We have our IDF soldiers. They are well-trained and fully motivated. And trust us, they are the best investment in our country. We don't want any arms or weapons either. We develop our own and invest billions a year on advanced technology, also that our children and all innocent citizens won't get hurt, and we have reached the maximum specific prevention capabilities with our Iron Dome, for example. Military experts from every corner of the world come to learn from us on how to combat in an asymmetric war. Unfortunately, when your neighbors threaten your existence, you become an expert in this field. We also don't need your support in words if it is too difficult for you. Yeah, it will be nice, but we understand you depend on Arab oil and don't wish to piss off your friends with the keffiyehs on their heads and their hands on the switch. We all know how that brings up the gas prices. So we will ask you for one thing. Don't disturb and don't get in our way. Because you obviously know that no country would allow their densely populated areas to be under vicious rocket attacks day and night. No country would allow innocent children to live in shelters or have 15 seconds to run for their lives. So why should we, a country approximately the size of New Jersey, allow this? No country would show this much restraint while their citizens of all ages become the target of a radical extremist religious terror organization that also won't acknowledge their right to exist. We have kept quiet and put up for this for too long, but the silence is deafening, as you should probably know, dear world, for you have kept your silence about the tragic mass murders in Syria, the violations of human rights in China, the suppressing of the minorities and the LGBT communities in Russia, and so on. But for some reason, when it comes to this specific tiny country that resides in parts between the murderous, restraintless terror and the advanced civilized West, suddenly you have a lot to say, absolutely loads to say. So just let us be. We don't need lessons in ethics and definitely don't need advice on how to protect our country. we don't need you to preach to us about restraints and compassion or how to negotiate with terrorists. So if you aren't willing to be helpful, like the many other times that you just set aside and allowed them to massacre Jews just for being Jewish, at least don't stand in our way and let us do the job ourselves. Thank you. Sincerely, the people of Israel.
And that, of course, is a wonderful statement, and I really hope that we abide by that. There is a lot of information coming out, of course, what's going on in Israel right now. We certainly do stand with Israel. I put a link in the chat room for everybody. This is from the National Post, and this was written by Rex Murphy. And Rex Murphy, well, he's a bit of a national treasure here in Canada. But I just want to read a little bit of his article, and then I'm going to ask Tim a question, and after that, Agador. I often call to mind the Avalon Peninsula of Newfoundland when I think of Israel and imagine what it would be like to crowd 7 million people onto the fragments of the island most familiar to visitors. And I think further of what it would be like to see Carbonaire or Twillingate or St. John's under deadly attacks on and off for 70 years and further troubled by a rain of thousands of rockets and missiles fired apparently at whim, indifferent to their targets by a remorseless enemy. Considering this and all its struggles since its birth, I've long thought that tiny, democratic Israel should just be left alone to thrive. Many others are starting to see it that way, too. I sense some turn in the world's opinion on what we call the Middle East conflict. The terms of understanding are changing. Canada, more particularly Stephen Harper, can take partial credit for some of that change. As a world leader, Mr. Harper has been the best countervoice to the cliched hostility and animus found in most self-labeled progressive perspectives. Indeed, his clarity on Israel's right to exist, to be free of menace and molestation from its enemies, greatly annoys the professional anti-Israelis who flourish on the campuses and in the progressive opinion pages of the West. And rarely has he been as staunch in his backing of the beleaguered Israeli state as in this latest flare-up. The Prime Minister has spoken with exquisite clarity on Israel's right to defend itself. On this white-hot question, even Mr. Harper's most visceral critics have to acknowledge he is a very model of the clear, unequivocating politician. Dislike him if you will, object to the policy if you must, but no one may claim he is not absolutely forthright on where he stands and what he means. He is certainly more resolute than U.S. President Barack Obama on this file and on Ukraine, too, and is setting something of a leadership example to his peers around the world. Now, when you read things like this, as a Canadian, my chest it swells with pride in that Canada has taken very much an absolute position on our support of Israel and its right to exist. And Tim, I know that you mentioned David Cameron and that he is showing unequivocal support. Do you think that if we, and I'm going to pass this to Agador in a minute, but I want him to answer this. Do you think that these opinion pieces, i.e. by Rex Murphy, if they become global, if we have more opinion pieces like this, will this sway public opinion?
Well, I certainly think it has the best chance of swaying public opinion. And just before I get into that, I'll just say we do have some support from David Cameron. I'm not quite sure I would use the word unequivocal. One of the things that was mentioned in the chat room was that Cameron may be a little bit cynical about things, given that he's got a general election coming up next year. And he probably wants to cover his bases and make sure that he goes with... I mean, he must have seen what has happened in the past couple of weeks with the opinion being very being swayed to a great extent by the publicity that the Israeli Defense Forces have put out on social media. That, in my view, has had no small impact on what people think. And I think when he sent Philip Hammond to Israel to stand on a podium next to Benjamin Netanyahu to say what he did, I think it does reflect a shift in opinion, a very welcome shift in opinion, but I wouldn't quite go so far as to say unequivocal support. But having said that, when you get these opinion pieces that come out, the whole point of having public relations in the first place or to be able to get your point of view across is persuasion, is to bring people to see the rightness of your cause. Now, in recent years, and I'm maybe talking about the past 30 or 40 years, people's ability to see what is obviously right and moral and correct and virtuous and ethical has been compromised by the unremitting advance of political correctness and multiculturalism. That has been sold to us as the only proper way to think, and anybody who deviates from that has been demonized, and depending on where you are, your job could be at risk. All sorts of nasty things could happen to you if you don't conform to the politically correct and multicultural mindset. But I think people are now realizing that the multiculturalism is a complete failure. There's absolutely no question about that. That's a complete and utter disaster. And even David Cameron, bless his little cotton socks, has gone on record to say that.
I've got to steal that.
I seem to have touched a nerve there. Yes, right. Okay. Well, I mean, the point is that he's not the only one to have said that. Angela Merkel has said the same thing. The Chancellor of Germany. Did I say Chancellor? I think she's Chancellor. And President Sarkozy of France said the same thing. They're all in agreement that multiculturalism is a complete failure. And so they should be, because if you've got more than one culture in a country that is vying for supremacy, you're going to get community cohesion is going to be the very last thing you're going to get. I think it's more true to say that we live in a multi-ethnic environment, most of us, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because ethnicity is something that people have no control over. I mean, if you're born a Caucasian, then you're Caucasian and that's it. And if your skin colour happens to be a certain hue, there's not much you can do about that, unless, of course, your name happens to be Michael Jackson. But if you're talking about the culture, then, of course, there has to be a point where the dominant culture, if it's going to remain dominant, says we have the moral high ground. And I believe that when it comes to Judeo-Christian culture, we do have the moral high ground. We've certainly got, if you look at it dispassionately, we've got everything going for us in terms of a civilizational model and a framework for the future advancement of humanity that Islam just does not have and will never have. Islam, I'm not talking about the religious aspects, because as we all know, Islam is not a religion. It cloaks what it does in a thin veneer of religion. It is primarily a political ideology, and as a civilizational model, it's an absolute disaster. Everywhere that Islam is implemented, the people live in I won't say dire misery and poverty, because obviously if you happen to live on top of the pile of oil, you can alleviate the financial aspects of your existence to a certain extent. But in terms of every other material measurement, Islam is at the bottom of the heap in pretty much every respect. And so I think that here we are with our Judeo-Christian civilization, our culture, and it's a delicate flower that must be nurtured and protected against the barbarians at the gate. And if we lose it, we do so at our peril. I think we've got to stand up and say that we do have something worth defending, and we shouldn't be scared to do it. And There was one other point I wanted to add, but I think at this stage I'm going to pass the mic back to Kel and let you bring Agador in to give his view on what I've just said.
Okay, but make sure that you have your pen and pad on your desk so that you can jot down that thought, because we'll want to hear that later. Agador, when you... What Tim pointed out, yes, it's almost like a lukewarm support for Israel amongst various world leaders, with the exception of Stephen Harper and Angela Merkel. But in the United States, Barack Hussein Obama is more or less defending the rights of Palestine to exist. Now, we gave them quite an opportunity to flourish, and they blew it. They blew it miserably. They couldn't comprehend life and flourishment and success. They were nothing more than wanting to go after Israel, go after Israel. They were given a golden opportunity by Israel, and they turned it to rust. And Barack Hussein Obama is still supporting them. What do you think is going to happen this year? You guys are having your by-elections in November. Will you, if you restore the House and the Senate, will you be able to hold him to task for what I call war crimes? And Benghazi comes to mind. I'm not straying too far. I'm just trying to wrap up my point in a neat little bow. But his support of terrorist organizations, would that be enough, do you think, for people to come out and vote in droves and change the tide, get the House and the Senate back, and hold this person accountable? And this latest support of Hamas is miserable, and I'm wondering, what do you think about that?
Well, again, I'll address your first question first, which is about the support for Israel. I really think that it's beginning partly through social media and partly through the mainstream media, which, as Kenneth McClinton, the exceptional conservative, points out, is people like us and Vito Esposito and many of the others. That support for Israel is coming from the bottom up. In other words, it's coming from the people and not necessarily from some of our governments. Excuse me. As is evidenced by people like us who have support for Israel, myself and Vito Esposito and maybe people like Bigfoot and his blog and others, versus President Obama, whose support is lukewarm on the best of days, under the sunshine with a nice reflector around his neck. The op-ed pieces that are starting to come out in favor of Israel, the reflections of what's going on from social media, the word that's coming out of Israel, I think is beginning to turn the tide. Now, this is not going to compensate for the deaths and the damage that have been caused in Israel through this latest in a depressingly long line of pardon me, rocket attacks and responses that has gone on, but it is hopefully showing a beginning of a resistance to this whole Hamas, how should I put it? Freak show or repeat appearance of terrorism that is visited on Israel once every right around about every two or so years, and I think this could actually eventually create enough political pressure, yes, in all of our countries. So that we have people in our various congresses, parliaments, whatever we have, to take our leaders to task and make them support Israel, and if they will not support Israel, to remove them. In the case of the President of the United States, there are many here in the United States that think he needs removal from office for far more than just non-support of Israel. And to answer your last question, yes, it is still a possibility, though one that's beginning to vanish in the opinion of many, that if a more conservative and or more libertarian group of people manage to wrest control of our House and Senate from control of those in charge of it now, we might just be able to, at the very least, hold this president's and this administration's feet to the fire and make them support Israel, and if not, possibly remove them from office. And with that, I will turn it back to you and Tim.
Okay, we're going to take a break here in a moment, and I have lost my studio, so if you guys can bear with me for a moment until I can get back in there, I would very much appreciate that. We are just reminding you that we are talking about the issues of what's going on in Israel and our staunch support for Israel. This is, once again, we are getting ourselves into a situation. We do not want to see things returned to pre-1967. Israel was benevolent with the Palestinians, as it were. This is what's going on with Israel right now is unacceptable. And I've got my studio back, so thank goodness for that. But we will take that break now. This is a song by Ofra Haza. It's called Imnin Elu, and she is a prolific singer out of Israel. We'll see everybody back here in 3.5 moments. And welcome back, everybody. And just to remind you, you are listening to a brand new program. It is called Islam Exposed. And today we are defending Israel. And to remind you again, your hosts are Agador, Kel, and Tim. We all have our respective radio programs, but once a week, Thursday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, we are going to be joining you as a team and sharing with you issues from around the world and from our respective countries. We are three hosts, three different countries with one common denominator, our love of freedom and a planet rid of the scourge. Now, you listen to that song by Afra Hazza. Im Na'alo. In English, that means if the doors are shut. I put the lyrics in the chat room if you want to take a look at them. But one thing I love about this song is that it speaks about hope and freedom. Even if the doors of the righteous will shut, the doors of heaven will still be open. The living God will exalt them by cherubs and raised by his spirit, living God. See, people, this is the difference. Israel lives for life. They love life. They cherish life. They preserve life. And this is why they hate fighting. The Mohammedans, they live for death. And their sole purpose in life is to conquer and to create a caliphate. As long as Islam exists, there will be no peace on the planet. And I'm getting feedback from somebody. Can you guys please quit doing dishes back there? That is the difference, is that Israel and the West, we love life. We want to see our progeny flourish and succeed and honor the golden rule, and that is do unto others as they would do unto you. Islam has no comprehension of that, and I'm still getting feedback from somebody. If Islam continues on the path that it is, as Agador aforementioned, we're not a million miles away from this anymore, folks. It's right on our doorstep. If we don't do something about it right now, we are next. There is that old refrain, first comes Saturday, then comes Sunday. Israel is a staging ground. If Israel goes, so does the Middle East. And if the Middle East goes, so does the West. We have to curtail Islamic immigration, and we have to keep our respective governments to account for the atrocities that are committed within our borders. We are welcoming. We are loving. We are always welcoming people from all over the globe. But when it comes to Islam, that is a whole different ball of wax, and that is something that we have to ensure is put a full stop to. Tim, you being in the UK, you are seeing a whole lot more than we are seeing at this point in North America. I'm going to ask you a question. You are a writer for Brenner Brief and other publications, and you have been following the Trojan horse situation in Birmingham quite closely and have been apprising people of that. That's just one example, but now we have another example, and I'll let you address the Trojan horse briefly, but there's another development that just came out the other day, and that is the Labour Party promising to fund madrasas by 2015.
Yeah.
Now, my goodness, what is going on in the UK, and what is your government doing about it?
Well, quite so. I mean, Labour, unfortunately, is a party with absolutely no moral principles whatsoever. It likes to present itself as the caring, sharing party, and it likes to present the Conservative opposition as being the nasty party, and that's their words, not mine. And that's something that they push to a great extent every time there's a general election, or they think they might be able to get a few political points. outcomes the criticism of the Conservative Party, and whatever they do is presented as nasty, insofar as the Conservative Party is portrayed as not caring for poor people, as not caring for the disadvantaged in society, whereas the Labour Party will go all out to present itself as the party of the people on the side of the disadvantaged, the champions of the underdog, and so on. It's completely intellectually dishonest. And when you hear things like the Labour government planning on introducing madrasas in 2015 if they get into power, well, I don't doubt that they would. They have no interest in the long-term security of our country, and everything is focused on the short-term gain of getting into power and staying there, which is the goal of every single socialist government. I mean, to take an example, okay, with what we're seeing in America, Obama is doing everything he can to make sure that he not only stays in power for this term. I feel that the Americans are going to see something really horrendous over the course of the next year or thereabouts, which will make it very hard for them to remove him from power at all. That would not surprise me in the slightest. And Democrats are not saying a great deal about it, because although they know that what Obama is doing is morally wrong on so many levels, they can see themselves getting into power and staying there for the foreseeable future. So they're keeping very quiet about it. All right, I'm being somewhat simplistic here. But we've got a very similar situation going on in the UK. And to increase the number of madrasas in our country, in the UK, is probably one of the worst things you could possibly do for the long-term security of the country. We've got a situation here in this country where we have far too many mosques, Islamic schools, madrasas, and they are bringing up children with hatred towards the West, with hatred towards Jews, gays, and Christians, and anybody and everybody and anything that is non-Muslim. Now, of course, if you talk to a Muslim, they'll say, oh, that isn't true at all. But of course, how do you know when a Muslim's lying? Well, his lips are moving. And you have to bear in mind that the concept of taqiyya means that you cannot trust, under any circumstances, you cannot trust any Muslim with anything that they have to say about Islam. You have to look at the evidence independently, and if a Muslim says something to you, you have to verify it. You cannot take it on trust. And we have been taking it on trust with Muslims for far too long in this country, and we have been duped on a grand scale. So what we ought to be doing is, far from saying let's have an opportunity for more madrasas in the country, we should be saying let's scale back Islam lock, stock and barrel. My personal feeling is that Islam has absolutely no place in the public space of any civilized society whatsoever. If somebody wants to pray to a deity five times a day in the privacy of their own home, or if they want to worship a 7th century desert warrior in the privacy of their own home, well, that's one thing. You can't really legislate against that. But what we can legislate against is Islam in the public space. And I'm talking not only about mosques, which are not religious buildings for the purpose of worship. They are command and control centers designed to expand Islam, and that's their primary purpose. Religious worship comes right down at the bottom of the list. And so I'm talking about the public presence in terms of mosques. I'm talking about the ability of Muslims to take decisions that benefit only Muslims to the detriment of non-Muslims whenever they get into political power. Because of that tendency, you're going to have to put constraints at some point or another. You're going to have to put constraints on what decisions Muslims are allowed to take that affect the rest of us, because given the opportunity, the decisions that they take will be detrimental to the rest of us, and they will benefit only Muslims. And if you have any doubt about that whatsoever, you only have to look at the London borough of Tower Hamlets, where, despite the population being, oh, I don't know, 35% Muslim, something like that. The council, yeah. The Tower Hamlets Council, is 100% Muslim, and they have taken control of the budget, which is a £1 billion budget, ladies and gentlemen. It's not small peanuts, and they have used it, I won't say almost exclusively, but certainly predominantly for the benefit of the minority of Muslims in that council. I mean, everybody says that Tower Hamlets is 100% Muslim. It actually isn't. It just looks and feels that way because Muslims are in your face everywhere you go. And mosques and Islamic edifices, Islamic-related buildings are springing up everywhere. You have virtually no opportunity to do anything about it because the council is completely corrupt, 100% Islamic controlled, under Lutfa Rahman, a mayor who is as bent as a 9-bob note and who will stop at nothing to keep himself in power. And what you see with Lutfa Rahman over here in the United Kingdom is what you're going to be seeing with Obama come election time when he's due up for... Well, to relinquish his post, I think it's sometime, what, November next year, is it? Or is it the year after? But anyway, the point is that he's going to, I feel sure, do everything he can to stay in power in the same way.
A miserable 2016 is the national election.
Indeed.
Two more miserable years.
Well, I'm going to pass the microphone back to you, Kel, because I feel I'm likely to get a little off topic, and I'll let you. I can hear Agador wants to add something to that, so I'll pass the mic
absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely, and talking about the endorsement of bringing up with Tim about the Labour Party promising full funding for madrasas. Agador, in the United States, you have an issue with this as well. They're called the Gulen Schools. And this was inspired by a Turkish Islamic scholar and preacher named Fethullah Gulen. And this movement has no official name, but it's usually referred to as Hizmet or service, and by its followers as Samet or Community Assembly by the broader public in Turkey. Now, this is a movement, and he is setting up charter schools in the United States, and they are importing teachers from Saudi Arabia, Turkey. They are importing imams. It is exclusive Islamic educated. It's exclusively Islamic educated. These centers. You guys in the United States are seeing a lot of creeping Sharia going on there. Personally, I think it's getting a little more stomping. But what Tim was alluding to as well, what Barack Hussein Obama might do, I don't know. He might create some sort of martial law in which the elections could be suspended. Who knows what this person is capable of. But when you see Sharia creeping into your community and like these Gulen schools, for example, what do you suppose the wider public are thinking of this, if they're thinking at all?
Well, that's two barrels I have to fire instead of one, but I'm capable of it.
Go for it.
now it's very interesting. There is a movement in the United States of America. Our Americans in the chat room will confirm this. There's a movement to shift public money to things like charter schools. This is seen as a sometimes better alternative to our public schools, which have just become government indoctrination centers, more or less. And it is disturbing to see Islamists begin to glom on to this concept because they could gain some public funding through this. So it's something that we're going to have to watch extremely closely. And parents and those who are interested in education here in the United States are going to have to be informed, again, by the mainstream media, which is us, that this sort of thing is going on. This is non-attentiveness to this issue is what allowed the Common Core standards and its equivalents to take hold in many parts of the United States as it is. this would be even worse. When I saw that story about the Labour Party saying in the UK saying that they're going to have public funding for madrasas by 2015, my head exploded because I knew that that the left here in the United States is much like the left anywhere, and they love what Europe is doing, and they often mirror Europe. So it won't be that many more years before they try and implement something like that here in the States. So yes, this is a very concerning thing to me, and it's something that we have to watch, and that we have to be careful to bring up the point that not every charter school is going to necessarily be a good thing that we're going to want to publicly fund here in the United States. That's one barrel fired off. Now, the other one, I can well remember towards the end of the second Bush administration, people on the left saying, oh, well, you know, this guy will find some way to invent some disaster so that he can stay in power. But one of the more quote-unquote fun aspects of our president is that he telegraphs his moves. If you actually listen to what he has to say, he tells you more or less what he's going to do. And I don't know what interview it was in, but he was giving the interview, and he said that that he was going to do everything to complete his agenda for America by January of 2017 when he leaves office. Yes, we have to put up with him until January of 2017. But, and this is the more interesting bit right here, he said he was going to make sure that circumstances were put in place to where if his agenda could not be completely adopted by the time he left office, it would be inevitable that it would be adopted within a few years. So what you have at this point is not Obama wanting to stay president of the United States. He'll gladly hand that over to Hillary Clinton and let her be the Stalin to his Lenin. And mm-hmm. he will yeah. retire to his palace in Hawaii and go on to make fabulous money at speaking engagements and things like yeah. that while his agenda, which is his legacy, is implemented in the United States of America. In this aspect, and only in this aspect, when it comes to President Obama, he cares less about himself than he cares about doing the damage to the United States of America that he actually thinks is doing the right thing. And I'll pass it back to you guys.
I asked Tim to share something. I want Tim to share something very important, but there's a lead-in that I think you should do, Tim, and of course that is giving a brief summary of the Trojan horse going on in Birmingham. So, Tim, back to you.
Yes, indeed. Well, this was something I was going to touch on before I got carried away with the 2015 Labour manifesto.
You carried away, never.
with the madrasas. And I thought, well, okay, I was going to come back to the Trojan horse, but I thought I would let you guys have your say first. Ladies and gentlemen, just in case you haven't heard about the Trojan horse over the past couple of months, I'm referring to an investigation that was carried out in Birmingham in the United Kingdom into an alleged infiltration of Birmingham schools by hardline Islamists. It started with a letter that was handed to local government by somebody who was concerned, that outlined a plan of takeover by Muslims in quite a few Birmingham schools, and it was initially thought to be a hoax, but Michael Gove, the education secretary at the time, took it seriously enough to commission an investigation. And it's just as well he did, really, because what was uncovered was really quite disturbing. There were alleged activities such as the Board of Governors of several Birmingham schools trying to completely change the national curriculum in favour of an Islamic curriculum. Things like music were going to be banned, boys were going to be taught separately from girls, sex education was going to be banned, there were going to be preachers invited to give talks, preachers who had previously got form for very inflammatory rhetoric in terms of what they would say about Jews and gays and Christians, and it all seemed highly unlikely. This was what one might have thought 4 or 5 months ago, but it turns out that the investigation, which was handled by a former counter-terrorism officer, Peter Clark, it turned out that it was actually absolutely true. And far from being restricted to just three schools in the Birmingham area, which was the original allegation, it turned out to affect over 20 schools and possibly other schools in Bradford, Manchester and London. And those investigations are still ongoing, but the report has come back. Original report that's commissioned has been put into the public domain just this week, and it transpires that it's absolutely true that there was a concerted plot over many years. Wasn't not just a recent thing, it was over many years, that went be overlooked by the local council, that's Birmingham City Council, and it was to subvert the educational system in Birmingham to promote an Islamist agenda in all sorts of horrific ways. Now, I've written about this in Brenner Brief, and if anybody wants to look at it in detail, please go to brennerbrief.com. I think Kel has probably put the link into the chat room by now, and take a look. But that's it in a nutshell. And it's unfortunate in a way that Michael Gove, having done all this sterling work, was actually replaced as Education Secretary in a cabinet reshuffle last week. That's the parliamentary reshuffle that will happen every now and again, in particular on the run-up to a general election. I think Michael Gove was doing a great job. I think it's a shame that he's gone. He's been replaced by a lady called Nikki Morgan, we'll have to wait and see how she turns out. In my view, she looks like she might be a bit of a lightweight, but she did make a statement in the House of Commons this week about the Trojan horse affair. And I'll read this verbatim. There's only a couple of paragraphs, but it's really quite amusing. A chap called... just get this at the top. A chap called Michael Deacon, who's the parliamentary sketch writer for the Daily Telegraph, had this to say about it, and I'll quote more or less verbatim. Mrs. Morgan's statement in the House of Commons was about the Trojan horse affair. Peter Clark, former head of Scotland Yard's counter-terrorism command, just published his report about alleged Islamist extremism in some Birmingham schools. The report, said Mrs. Morgan, described a determined effort by people with a shared ideology to gain control of certain schools' governing bodies. It also, she went on, cited evidence of an intolerant Islamist approach, which denies the validity of alternative beliefs. An intolerant Islamist approach, eh? I wonder what a tolerant Islamist approach would be like. Ah, Jenkins, you are an infidel kafir who will burn in the hell fire for all eternity. Nonetheless, your French verbs are coming on in leaps and bounds, and your performances for the first 15 rugby team are the toast of the common room. Indeed, you are one of the most promising, filthy, unbelieving dogs in your form. I fondly hope that when the great day of judgment arrives, you will be among the very last to be struck down. You are a credit to your parents. May they rot in hellfire. So that was my interpretation of an intolerant Islamist, a tolerant Islamist approach, which seems to be rather the opposite of what Nikki Morgan had in mind. But yes, I mean, in all seriousness, this is was a calculated. Covert attempt over many years to subvert the educational system in Birmingham, it's perhaps slightly worrying that Birmingham City Council, that produced its own report alongside Peter Clark's counter-terrorism officer alongside his report, Birmingham City Council's report said, problem? Trojan horse? What Trojan horse? There's no problem here. Move along. Everybody go back to sleep, or words to that effect. And they were trying very hard to play it all down. But I'm rather hoping that heads are going to roll at Birmingham City Council. They certainly deserve to roll for ignoring the warning signs for so long. And of course, what do we see at the bottom of it? Accusations of racism, Islamophobia, a witch hunt, demonising Muslims, all the usual things that are trotted out whenever Muslims are caught out doing something completely uncalled for, which is pretty much most of the time, if we're going to be honest. The people who were coming out with these accusations of racism and Islamophobia and so on were not just Muslims. They were people like the Bishop of Birmingham, for heaven's sake. There were people like Chris Sims, the Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, for heaven's sake. West Midlands Police, I hasten to add, is one of my favourite police forces in the world, with whom I've had several dealings recently and wouldn't have a word said against them. But nevertheless, Chris Sims of the West Midlands Police seemed to think it was all racism and Islamophobia, and that was back in March and April. And of course, it turned out to be nothing of the sort. It was a very well-founded accusation, and I'm rather glad it got out in the open. So there we go, ladies and gentlemen. That's a little background on the Trojan horse for you, complete with my my impression of a tolerant Islamist. And I'll pass the microphone back to Kel now.
I love it. Paul Alexander put something in the chat room from his website, and ladies and gentlemen, that is cpnagasaki.wordpress.com, and he is Defender of Faith, Guardian of Truth. And Tim and Agador, I'm going to share this with you because it does tie in to what we've been discussing about what's going on in our American, British, and of course Canadian schools. The headline is, "Extremists in Attempt to Brainwash Kids Claiming Rigby Death and Boston Bombings Were Hoaxes. Fanatics in the Trojan Horse Plot to Control Schools and Brainwash Pupils Made the Sick Suggestion in a Series of Messages." Now, they are, like I say, and this really disgusts me, that they bring in these imams to preach this garbage. They also said that gay people were animals with satanic ways, a shock investigation found. The report warned that innocent pupils were being taught to be intolerant of other faiths. Education Secretary Nikki Morgan, 41, told MPs there was compelling evidence that hardliners tried to invade several Birmingham schools. Yep, we're sticking on the theme of the Trojan horse, but this really disturbs me, in that these lessons are going on unfettered, and that the pupils are walking out of these classes. And these are in the public schools. These aren't in madrasas, ladies and gentlemen. This is right in the public schools. And that they're being taught that the death of Facilier Lee Rigby was a hoax, and the Boston bombings was a hoax. Like, this is what's going on in our public schools. This is another reason why this show is going to concentrate on keeping our government accountable for what's going on. Now, Tim succinctly explained what's going on with the Trojan horse issue. This is yet another example of the Trojan horse in our public schools. And I, Agador, when you see this sort of thing, you must have quite a few thoughts about the infiltration of madrasas and so on and so forth. I alluded to the Gulen schools. But when, you know what? I'm going to put a completely different spin on this and throw you, Agador. Sorry about this. But I'm just going to bring up an example. This is happening in Canadian and American high schools as well. We had an example out of Florida not too long ago in which a pupil, I think she was in grade 10, She came home from school, and her mother asked her, "How was your day at school?" "Oh, it was fun, Mother. What did you learn?" "Oh, we learned that Muslims are being persecuted and that Islam is a beautiful religion." And the mother, well, you know, I'm sure her jaw dropped to the floor, and she inquired further, "Well, what exactly was that? How was that part of the lesson plan?" "Oh, well, we dressed up in burqas for an hour just to see what it feels like to be a Muslima." And the mother was incensed, and she contacted the school board and said, "This is not why I pay my tax dollars and send my daughter to school to learn this claptrap. You stop this right now." And, of course, I could go on ad nauseum with other examples, i.e. the book about world religion and how a disproportionate amount is afforded to Islam. But that might be another show. But when we see these stories, and that in Birmingham they're being told that these Islamic atrocities are nothing but hoaxes, these kids are eating this up, but they're also affecting our own Christian and Jewish kids, and that they're being taught this stuff. They're vulnerable. Their minds are still developing, and they come home, and they are espousing that Islam is a religion of peace. We know it's not, and they are going even further in infiltrating in our children's minds that Islam is a persecuted religion. Agador, this is happening in American high schools as well. How would we deal with this?
Have we lost Agador? You there, Agador?
Oh no! I'm here. No, I said first of all, Tim, I'm going to need you if you have a spare room. I'm going to fly over to UK and get you to show me some of your Aikido moves because Kel's doing some real anti-jihadi radio judo here. But our schools, as I said in the chat room, our public schools are actual extensions of our governments. And there are we could actually just start a marathon right now and still be here 24 years from now. Each of us talking about various examples of unacceptable things that are coming out of our schools on a local level. I mean, there's example after example after example of this, and this is where our parents have to be vigilant and have to be prepared. To do the hard thing, the hardest thing, which would be for me, which would be to go to these PTA meetings and talk to the school administrators and to tell them that this sort of thing is completely unacceptable. Because if that isn't done, you're going to have Che Guevara T-shirt wearing teachers in our schools telling our kids all sorts of ridiculously very dangerous things about the ideology of Islam. And if people can't do that, they're going to have to spend some time, possibly on a daily basis, deprogramming their kids when they're taught these things about Islam. And that is a very difficult thing to do, especially as they get into the higher education levels. Now, I found this because for years I lived here with my stepson. And being a college lad, he was into the college life and the college lifestyle. And a lot of that centers around political correctness. And, of course, as we know, in the politically correct world, Islam is the religion of peace that is being picked on by the evil, nasty righties and the horrible Christians.
Oh, yeah.
And the sense is there that, yes, Islam is being so victimized by the bad people in the world. So it's an uphill battle to try and deprogram our kids, but we have to make the attempt, because if we don't, what we'll wind up with is young adults that we can't even recognize believing the most ridiculous and dangerous things out in the world, willing and ready to allow Islamists to go through with their agenda, which they will take advantage of and do. Now, I want to go off on a bit of a tangent here.
Please do.
All right. I was having an interesting conversation with a fella on Twitter last night on the Red Eye feed. Now he's a good man. He's a former military law enforcement officer, if I'm not mistaken, and therefore he's a professional interrogator. And he was talking about Islam and the fact that the Islamists that he works with in his particular place of work on the night shift are all good people who just want to be left alone and all of this sort of thing. And, you know, I sounded him out on a few questions. You know, do any of them believe, for instance, that Sharia should supplant the Constitution of the United States, various things like that? And he says, well, no, of course not. He says, no, they don't. He says, yes, I know that there are some crazies out there, but, you know, you should understand that that many Islamists are actually good people. And I pointed out to him that is only at this stage because their population percentage is so small here in the United States of America. And I said that when their population begins to increase, that begins to change. They're no longer the happy, friendly Islamists. They're the grabby, demanding, pushy Islamists. And as their population increases and their enclaves get larger, they become the more jihadi-minded, violent Islamists. All of these things change, and the progression of Islam does get into our education systems. We have to be vigilant on all fronts, because Islamists have been very good at infiltrating societies and breaking them down from the inside. Because they've been doing it for 1,400 years. So as an American president once said, the price of liberty, in this case, liberty from Islam, is eternal vigilance. And I'll turn it back over to you guys.
You know, we're not immune to this in Canada. I used to be rather smug about Canada being immune to this, but we're not. We have a very effective prime minister, Stephen Harper, who is pro-Israel. And ladies and gentlemen, I have been discussing the issues of Israel throughout the entire program, but we did also bring up the issues of education within our public school systems. And it's important for you as parents or aunts or uncles or grandparents to know what is being taught in your children's public schools, and the invasion of the Trojan horse in the UK, and how your children are being indoctrinated into this cult. It's not a religion, it's a cult, we know that. But in Canada, we have an issue, and this is in Toronto, pardon me, and that our public schools, some of them, are being turned into mosqueterias every Friday afternoon. The logic being is that while these Muslim students were, the Mohammedan students, I should say, were leaving classes Fridays to attend the local mosque, and they weren't coming back to classes. And so the infinite wisdom of the Toronto District School Board was to, well, let's just turn the cafeteria into a mosque for them, like a, let them bring in an imam. And thus it went. I complained left, right, and center. And, of course, nobody gets back to you because these are politicians collecting their fat pensions and they want to get the hell out of Dodge and collect. But these are my tax dollars, and these are your tax dollars. We cannot allow the infiltration of Islam to affect our public schools. Tim writes tirelessly about this on Brenner Brief. Agador speaks about this tirelessly on his radio program, and of course you know what I do. I never shut the hell up about it. We cannot afford to allow our politicians off the hook for this. And this is why I have started a letter-writing campaign. And I know a lot of people say that might be a moot point, but you know what? It's worth it. If you can sit down for 5 minutes in front of your computer, go to your Microsoft Word, and pen a letter, sign it, and send it via registered mail where they have to sign for it, in which they will, of course, open it, and show your politely explain your concerns about what is going on in the public schools, what is going on in your government institutions. Write all of your representatives. And if we can get this letter-writing campaign off the ground, more the better. But holy smokes, we're down to virtually our last 10 minutes of talking points. So what I'm going to do is that I'm just going to remind people that the Red Fox Blogger has quite a few shows here. On Mondays, you have Tim and myself at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. On Tuesdays, we are at the Radio Jihad Network. We are the Freedom-Loving Infidels. On Wednesday, at the Red Fox Blogger, you have Mike Holt of Restore Australia. And now, on Thursdays, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, you have Islam Exposed. And on Friday, you have your very own Cal Fritzy. That is the F-Bomb Show. Fridays, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. There's a lot of fine radio programs out there, guys. Get out there and start listening, because we are the citizen journalists, and we're the ones that dig deeper and bring you the truth. We do not subscribe to mainstream media. Mainstream media is on its way out. We are on our way in. And, yes, moving. All of these shows. Agador. Agador, Movin has a question for you. He wants to know, is your show on Blog Talk Radio?
No, my show is not on Blog Talk Radio. I'm throwing the link to where I'll be in the chat room right now. I am a very scary thought this is. I am helping launch the new format at Pundit Press Radio starting at 5:45 a.m. tomorrow. Pundit Press Radio will be launching a new streaming format for all of its shows, and The Unpleasant Blind Guy, this edition of The Unpleasant Blind Guy, will be the first show up, and it will be the show that closes out the broadcast day at midnight. That will eventually, I believe, be brought down to just Mondays and Fridays, but for now it's going to be every day. And that's where it's going to be, and I hope everyone will listen. There'll be a lot of good programs on there, and I'm hoping that we will get a certain very sexy red fox to appear somewhere in that location at some point. So there you go.
Oh, you know what? You keep talking like that, baby. I'll do everything for free, okay? But that's great, and I'm glad that that link has been finalized, because now for next week I have both your and Tim's links to share in the show highlights for the archive listeners as well now. And we are wrapping it up. I can't believe where the time went, but I think our debut show, we technically had a show 2 weeks ago, but everybody went on vacation, but this is realistically our debut show with the entire team. Agador, Tim, this has been fantastic. I'm going to just do a quick wrap-up, inform people that we stand with Israel. If you don't stand with Israel, you don't belong on these radio programs. My apologies, but Israel does have a right to exist. I am a Christian Zionist, and I believe in Israel's right to exist. And what they are enduring right now is unbelievable. I could not imagine waking up in the morning and hearing the sirens go off, and then I have to take cover. And that is just the day in the life of Israel. Tim, your final wrap-up thought?
Well, yes, indeed. I mean, it's brought it into a very sharp focus over the past 15 days or so, that Israel is on the front line of the global jihad. I mean, we always say this on our radio shows, but there's nothing like a hot war to actually bring it home. And I'm really privileged to be part of the team with yourself and Agador to bring the truth concerning Islam, and in specifically in relation to the conflict in Israel, out to a wider public. And I hope we'll be able to do a lot more of very similar things on this program, and of course on other programs that we're involved in, as things unfold in the days to come. So yes, it's been a great privilege to work with both of you tonight, and thank you everybody for listening in, everybody who's taking the trouble and the time out of their day to listen in tonight. It's been great having you here, and I do hope that you will join us again next week for another episode of Islam Exposed. And with that, I'll pass the microphone back to you, Kel, and I'm sure Agador will have a couple of words to say as well before we close down for the evening.
And we're playing hot potato microphone because I'm passing it right to Agador so that he can have his parting words.
All right. Well, first let me echo Tim and just say that it's a privilege to work with two people who are as intelligent and as focused in the not so much anti-jihad movement, but pro-civil rights movement, which is what this is really all about, as the two of you are. You know, Kel, you are a tireless host and producer. And it is always a pleasure to work with you, Tim. I like to call you an independent columnist because your stuff is just that good. And it's certainly a pleasure to work with you. I look forward to many more good shows with you guys. And hopefully we can keep our governments, flaws highlighted. So that people know what to say to their various officials when they come up to the microphone and start telling everyone how wonderful they are, we can point out and say, no, you're not. You still have much work to do. They have work to do, and we have work to do, showing everyone all the work that they have to do. So I will pass it back. Hot potato to Kel, and just say before I do that as I said earlier in the show, I completely support the state of Israel. I pray for the continuance of Israel and for the health and well-being of its people, and wish it only the best, and wish it only success as it fights off these savages. So back to you, Kel, and thank you very much.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, like I say, this is the premise of the program. Israel, of course, we support Israel, and this is what we're going to be doing. But this is Islam Exposed. We are going to be exploring the underbelly further, but we are also going to be holding our respective governments to task in their inaction in protecting us in the West against the scourge, because you know what? It is mass Islamity, and we have to stop the insanity. Islam is a political entity. I want to thank you. Tim wants to thank you. Agador wants to thank you for joining us and our brand new endeavor, the new show, Islam Exposed, Thursdays, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Every week, we will bring you fresh insights, fresh stories, fresh ideas, and fresh tools in which we will give you the tools to further educate yourself. We need to stand up to the scourge once and for all. We are at critical mass in our history right now. If we don't do something, we are leaving a legacy of chaos and ruin for our children, our grandchildren, and our progeny altogether. On that, Tim, Agador? Right on. Woo. Hey.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, you guys. I will see you back here next week, and have a great one. And ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful week. Just to apprise you, the Red Fox blogger will be on the air tomorrow night at 7 p.m. where she creates havoc because she's left to her own devices.
Yeah. Bring plenty of drinks, everyone.
Yep, that's right. Don't forget to bring your bottle of whiskey. Hey, Agador, we'll get everybody tanked up and we'll go to our Reactionary Speaks show. I love you.
Yes, they love it when we all show up. Yes, they do.
Yeah, I'm sure React goes, oh, God, they're here. Okay. You guys have a great night. I'll talk to you guys later.
Yeah, good night, Kel, and good night, Agador, and good night, everybody. See you soon.
Good night, Tim. Good night, Kel. Good night, what?
Good night, Agador, and good night, Tim. Thank you, everybody, once again, for joining Islam Exposed. We'll see you next week.